Coming to you from the Sherpa Chalet at the top of beautiful downtown Mount Podcastia, it's a special episode of Too Many Podcasts. I'm Jim the Podcast Sherpa, and today it's a special episode where I get to speak with people from the entertainment industry. So get yourself an aisle seat, pop up some popcorn, and get a cold drink ready, and sit back. Don't crunch too loud or else you'll miss the interview from the Sherpa Screening Room. Hey there, Rebels of the Sherpalution. Welcome to the Sherpa Screening Room, a presentation of Too Many Podcasts. So that would make me, Jim the Podcast Sherpa. Hey, how you doing? And who do we get to talk to today? We get to talk to a guy named Carmine Caradonna. I like Carmine. He was a really great guy. He is a filmmaker, a martial artist. He's an actor and a whole bunch of other stuff too. He used to be a DJ. There's a lot that he's done. I had a really great time having a conversation with him, learning about his career and some of the projects that he's still up to. Carmine's been at it since the 1970s, if not earlier than that. We'll get to him right after I tell you that today's podcast is being brought to you by Audible. And you can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/Sherpa. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Okay, now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's head over to the Sherpa Screening Room and listen in on my conversation with Carmine Caradonna. Hey, everybody. We are here in the Sherpa Screening Room. My guest today, again, a busy man. All these entertainment people, they are so busy. He's been a producer, an actor, a writer, an editor, a director, visual effects artist, cinematographer, and a sound editor, and also a club DJ and a martial artist. Whew, I'm out of breath just saying all that.
Yeah, well, you got to know a little bit of everything, don't you?
That's right. Everybody say hello to Mr. Carmine Caradonna. How you doing, Carmine?
I'm doing fine. Hello, everybody out there.
You know,
and hello to you, Jim.
Hello. I was going to say, you know, both of us being Italians from New York, you'd be like, hey, Carmine, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm here. So what's going on, Jim?
Oh, I'm just here with you as a guest.
Okay.
Okay, so why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, let's see. In the mid-70s, I became a DJ, working the crowds and all the clubs and everything. At that time, I was also into martial arts. When I moved down to Florida, I got into doing extra work with the movie industry. I like to look behind the camera. So I was an extra, and I was basically bugging everybody of how they do things and all to learn about how they film and do recording and everything. I had friends of mine, and we were kind of like the early Entourage, like that show, the Entourage. That's how we were. We had one guy that did break into movies, and he keeps going on. And he's like a character actor, been in a lot of movies. He broke out he used to hang out with all of us, too. The other few some moved on, and the other couple of guys are in Florida. And when I got in touch with them is when they got me back doing films and doing my own films, because they told me what camera to get and kind of like the to-go guys. When I need a problem, they told me the best thing when you do a film is not so much as a camera, it's the lens. It's the lens that you use, which you're going to get most out of the film. So I've been doing all that. I retired from DJing about 2004. You know, you get a little bit older, it's a little hard to do. And been working on doing certain acting roles. Recently I did an acting role with called Of the Streets. It's spelled the and then with a dollar sign and TREETZ. You can find that on Amazon Prime. I did my first role when they introduced my character there. They came out with a Streets 2, which my character got a little more, you know, active in that one. That one is still up in the air. I don't know where they're going to be showing that one. Right now I'm working on a film called Left-Handed Secret Agent. It's something I did about 3 years ago, went into the festivals with a trailer, and the trailer has won multiple awards. So I figured I'd write a story. So 3 years later, into writing and developing it, developing the screenplay, is where I'm selecting the actors and getting a letter of intent so I can start mentoring who's in it. So at that point, that's where I am about right now. Plus, my martial arts was all through that time. It still goes on. Of course, you always want to keep in shape.
Was it hard jumping from a short to a longer movie where you had a lot more character development and a storyline to work on?
Oh, yeah. Of course, you have to come up with a beginning, a middle, and an ending on it. The ending is always the hard part, how you're going to end it. You know, so the middle part, and you got on the start, you got to remember when you're writing a movie, the first 10 minutes of the movie is what's going to grab the audience. If you don't grab the audience in the first 10 minutes, you're going to lose everybody throughout the rest of the movie. So you have to come up with something that's going to grab everybody right away. And then you go into a little bit of lull of describing certain characters, and then you shoot back, and you have to remember continuity when you're writing it also. You have to cover. So it's almost, you have to go through three or four rewrites of it, basically. As you go over, you're going to take a look and go, oh, wow, man, this don't look right. Let me add this part to it, and this is not going to fit unless I add this. So that's where all the writing comes in when you're doing the screenwriting. And I always say what happens is when you're screenwriting, the story and the script is one thing. When you get to the screenwriting, you wind up talking to yourself. Remember, you're doing other characters. And then you got to develop the character in your head. But once I give the character to the actor, the actor has the ability to develop the character a little bit more. And then as you, as director, and know the script, you have the vision of what the movie's supposed to be. So you have to direct the person with the character, whether to pull him back from what he's doing or let him go further on.
Carmine is the title character in that movie. He is the left-handed secret agent, by the way. Are you left-handed
right.
in real life?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I've been left-handed all my life. Yeah, and always found into problems. I worked in a few of the scenes in the movie that goes with left-handers, that they always went through the whole thing. So I added a few of those things. That's why it's considered a left-handed secret agent. Kind of like when they want to give him a weapon and all. Oh, weapons, people realize weapons are made basically for a right-hander, as they always put. You always never see a person with a left hand. He goes in and he sees like all these weapons and he goes, this don't feel right, that don't feel right, that don't feel right. You know, and then I might as well take this one, which I always use, or I don't use anything else. You know, something like that. Or even when they write, you ever see because of the premise of the movie, they have to write out the report in one, so he writes it out, and it's all smudged, and they go, well, I can't read this. You know, you're left-handed, you write across. So, of course, you're going to start smudging things. Even when I was playing golf, I had to learn to play golf right-handed at first because there was no left-handed golf clubs at that point. Now they have left-handed golf clubs. In fact, my cousin gave me a set of left-handed golf clubs. So now I play left-handed, too, so I can play left-handed and right-handed.
So you can make a sequel called The Ambidextrous Secret Agent?
Right. Yeah, no, that could be next. Well, working with Wing Chun has turned me a lot of ambidextrous, too, on air. Because in Wing Chun, you have to learn each side equally. What happened was I was able to, like, even my, if I play baseball or something, which I played softball for a little bit, I was able to switch hand, you know, bat right-handed also. No, I still can't throw right-handed. I'm still, so everything's left-handed.
So what first got you into the martial arts? I know, I guess when you were growing up, there was a lot of fighting. It was like you lived in a tough neighborhood.
Well, see, when growing up, I grew up in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every day you fought, you know, every day was a fight. And, you know, if you didn't have a fight, it wasn't normal. I moved to Queens, and it's still the same way, but Queens was a little more, at that time, Springfield Gardens, Queens, a little more rural, so you didn't have that much. You had the families coming out and getting involved, which I didn't understand because in Brooklyn, nobody was between the kids who got in a fight, and that's it. You know, but then it became a little more rural. Then I moved to Freeport, Long Island, and that's where I discovered my first karate school was over there. Now, what got me into karate, basically, everybody thinks it was Bruce Lee, which that, you know, Bruce Lee, of course, everybody, you know, that made it more stronger. But the first time when I saw Elvis Presley in the movie Roustabout, broke the guy's arm when the guy touched his motorcycle and broke the guy's arm, and the guy goes, "Whoa, what's that?" And he goes, "Oh, that's karate." And I go, "Oh, wow, I want to learn that." So, you know, that's how I got into it. When I moved to Freeport, there was a school in Baldwin, and my parents paid for a first month and gave it to me as a present. It says, "Here, if you like this and you want to continue after that month, then you pay for it." So, uh-oh, here I am at 16 years old, and now I got to get a job. But luckily, as walk-in to the karate school, we used to walk from Freeport to Baldwin to go to the school. There was a movie theater in between, and they were looking for ushers. So I walked into there, and I applied. I got a job as an usher, and I was paying my way to the karate school, still walking to the karate school, sometimes on the way back or something like that, when my hours, I'll go and work and do my ushering. Then after that, past the usher, I went to work in a factory when the factories were around, and still continued my martial art training in Taekwondo. When that ended, because everything comes to an end, looking for a job, I didn't have a job. I went and cleaned my teacher's, you know, school and worked anything just to get a free month, you know, just to continue. So I did that. I received my second degree black belt in about 5 years, which everybody, oh, it took me about 5 years. I took it nice and slow. Wanted to do everything the right way. Then about 1979 is when I went to, we were looking for Wing Chun, because now everybody's in a Bruce Lee era. We was wondering, wow, how come he was so good with his hands and all that? So we found a Wing Chun school in Chinatown in Manhattan. And that's where we went. I was learning under Lee Moy San. And my main teacher was a man called Daryl Jordan, whose name, because he became, now he's a master, he's now called Lee Darlin. And he became our main teacher until I moved to Florida, and then I picked up with another teacher, which is Philip Holder from Jersey. I think he moves in a different state now, but he used to come and personally teach me down in Florida, which was the other half I was talking about. So that's how that all went from the 70s through the 80s through the 90s through the 2000s, where I had right now. I've got my Mook Jung, as they call it, it's a Wing Chun dummy, and that goes with me everywhere. And that one especially came from Taiwan.
The actors that you work with, if they know that you have the wooden dummy, does that kind of make them think twice before they might want to have an argument with you on set?
No, I don't mention, I don't talk to anybody about any of that. You know, that still stays private with me. Some people know what I do and what I've done, but they don't. They just, you know. In fact, a few of them, I told them, I says, in this new movie, the ones I'm going to be doing fight scenes with, but I'd be choreographing the fight scenes, so, you know, it'd be easy to do. I've done that before. I did a film in about 1974. It's called Face the Wind. It's on my YouTube channel. And over there, I choreographed all the fight scenes, and basically all the fighters that I dealt with in that movie weren't really anything known with karate and all. I just showed them the moves, used the camera angles, you know, different ways to look at it, and it looks like an actual fight scene. So it's not that hard to do a fight scene, even with somebody you don't know. As long as they're a little bit limber, a little bit in shape, you have to tell them, you know, this is what you're going to be dealing with, and, you know, you're going to have to go over with it. If you know what you're doing, you're a little more careful. There's going to be one scene I'm going to be doing, a knife fight with a woman who is supposed to be, she's supposed to be like the main femme fatale, right hand to the bad guy, that they send her after me because this secret agent is vulnerable to women, you know, because just like every other secret agent. And she tries to stab him, and it becomes a big knife fight scene in it. So I'm going to have to show it. I'm pulling there from the Philippine art of the scream, how to do that, because they have double senwali and different arts where you do trapping hands. They have a different type of trapping hands, which is stop, check, and hit. So you use the stop, check, and hit, put a knife in the hand, do that, and then go to a disarmament. And that's how you could get a nice fight scene. In fact, Steven Seagal used that in one of his movies, where the thing when it was in Brooklyn and there was a stick fight they call sticks. That was Danny Osantis. That was Bruce Lee's right-hand man that he did that fight scene. And that was a double Sinwali with the sticks. And then he disarmed them.
So when you lived down in Florida, a lot happened for you down there. You ended up working with Chuck Norris.
Yeah, I got called in. I was working with the Shuru style at that time. I had friends that were in it. And since I had Taekwondo and I knew all the different kicks that they weren't used to, they called me in to start showing them kicks. So they gave me an honorary black belt in Shuru, and I knew the owner of the system. And he used to have tournaments every year. So one of the tournaments, I was invited as a VIP. So I went there as a VIP. Chuck Norris was one of the guests, along with Bill Wallace, and Ed Parker was there. When they brought up the lights, everybody like mobbed Chuck Norris. They didn't believe. That was right after he did the Missing in Action movie. They had to close the lights down, pull everybody away, and then they called me over to stay with Chuck Norris, and they had the outer perimeter done with all the big guys. I mean, these are guys like 6 foot something, whatever it was. But I had the honor of being with Chuck Norris and making sure that nobody was going to bother him through the whole session. In fact, after that happened, I was called back 2 more years after that. Chuck Norris couldn't make it. He was doing Missing in Action 2. But I was able to work with an artist, Bill Wallace, again. Ed Parker one more time, and Ban Su Hong from the Billy Jack movies I worked with also, and I was personally with them. That was the extent. It was a great, you know, thing that you were able to stand next. In fact, they did a photo thing with the newspaper, and I was in a photo, and they named Chuck Norris this, and they had me and an unknown man. I was the unknown man, kind of like the unknown comic. I was the unknown man.
And you didn't need the paper bag either that the unknown comic used.
No, I didn't even know it. Yeah, that guy is. I laughed at that, with him. He's great. Unknown comic. I used to watch that show, The Gong Show, just to watch him on it. No, I didn't have the paper bag. It didn't matter anyway. Nobody knew who I was. I think I liked it that way because I really didn't want to. You know, like I said, I'm not into a person with the limelight. I'm not. I just didn't really. Wasn't into that. I was just really trying to accomplish things at that point.
We were saying earlier that, you know, usually whatever you ended up doing for a crowd in one respect or another.
You know, even though I like to be on my own, I always get thrust into something. Even when I moved back here to from Florida, when I retired from DJing, because I had enough of being, you know, I just want to live a quiet life with, you know, my wife. I came back here and I did it for a while. But then I found myself when I got connected with my friends from Florida who was doing movies down there and short films, they go, come on, you should get that. All of a sudden, here I go again. I'm back into this again.
Just when you think you're out, they drag you back in, right?
Yeah, it keeps dragging me back in one way or another. I guess that's my destiny.
So when you were a DJ, did you do weddings and parties and stuff like that also?
No, I wasn't really into that. I did that a couple of times. I really didn't enjoy that. My enjoyment was being in the club, being in front of the people, and how I started and what made me the love of the profession was introducing new music to the people on a constant basis. And when you do a party, you are restricted. Again, here comes I guess that's in my thing. I don't like restrictions because when you do a party, you're restricted. Like I said, when you go into a tournament, you're restricted. Everything is restrictions, and I'm kind of like a rebel out of that, and I don't like restrictions. So when I was in a club, I was able to promote new music that was coming out and positioning it in a set that will get the audience excited. What a lot of people lose when you're DJing is you control the room. You have the ups, you bring them up, you bring them down, you bring them, you know, level, you bring them to a point and then stop them and then restart them. And that's when you work in a club, and that's how you work a club. And you got to read the club, too. When you walk in, you look around, see how people move, you see how people dress, you see how people talk. And then you know what music you're going to be moving with. And then you always try to throw something that's going to throw them off, because the human mind likes to be challenged. And that's part of the challenging of it.
You know, and the description that you really just gave, I'm sure if you switched out music and making a movie, it's really almost interchangeable, isn't it?
That's what I said. Everything seems to be working in unison when it comes to that. Same thing when you do a movie. You want to throw something at the people they never saw before. You don't want to repeat the same things. You want to bring them up, I guess, and bring them down the same way. That's why it says the premises of this movie is a little weird. It goes back to the Matt Helm. Remember Dean Martin doing the Matt Helm movies? Remember in, like, Flint movies with James Coburn? It's that type of movie. That's what it's going to be like. There's going to be a couple of one-liners in there. They're going to be like, well, how could this guy do this? And you're going to see something you wouldn't expect the guy that could do that what he does. There's something that draws the movie that brings him back because he's an old guy.
So when can people expect to see this movie? I know you're just in the early stages of it.
Well, I can't expect anything because the stages, it goes in variations. Right now, when I work the, once when you work the budget, then you got to raise the money. Once you start raising the money is when you could start filming. Mm-hmm. I mean, then the next point is you want to budget yourself that you take a scene, three or four scenes that's going to be in the same area. That's what you're going to film for the day. You make an 8-hour day of it. Should be an 8-hour day. And then you would film those scenes within that time, and then it's going to go into editing. I'm probably going to be working with the editing also, as far as I'm going to be working with three cameras. Going to be two cameras that will be steady, and one's going to be a floating camera that will move around, make the action a little more livelier. That I'm going to need help with. I'm going to have other people that's going to be running those cameras while I run. If I'm not in the scene, I'm going to be running the camera. When it gets down to the editing, that's another thing where you're going to have to edit, and then you have to put sound effects into it, work that in. I talked to the people that I know in Florida, the ones I told you that brought me back. I might be working with them with a soundtrack because they do music also, and also with colorization of the film, because when you might be in different lighting or something like that, and the color, you want the color to look the same, not change color as the film goes on. So the color is going to have to stay steady. So they're going to work with the colorization of it too. Yeah, so once we get through all that, then we probably would know how long. I mean, I like to start shooting in April, if that's a factor, and I don't think it's going to take that long to film if everything goes according to the way I plan it. Hopefully, maybe by the fall, it would come out. Then you have to get distribution of where you're going to distribute it at. I'm not sure yet which way I want to go on that, unless I get some offers. The first thing to do is get the film in the can. Once you get the film in the can, the film is done. Then you could start shopping it. I mean, before then, what you do is just build it up. You build it up. You let parts out. You might do, as you're filming, you might let a little screenshots out, little pictures, and, you know, a lot of promotion that you're going to be dealing with. I got friends that are in the entertainment field that do promotions and all that, and they'll probably take that, you know, over and start working with that also and promoting the film a little bit more. But I want to get something in the can to show them that it's going forward.
You can tell that Carmine clearly knows a lot about making movies, and he actually owns his own movie-making company.
Oh, yeah. I put together Fun Pictures, which it's not on the registry yet. It will be once I get everything set together. But Fun Pictures, I went to a seminar, and of course you got the Nassau County film industry and Suffolk County film industry, and I proposed my name to them in Nassau County film industry, and they liked that name. It's Fun Pictures, F-U-2-N's and then Pictures, so it's a little, it's not like fun. It's a little, you know, weird. So they says, oh, we like that name. So If I want to go in that direction, I can contact them and see where we can go from there with them. But, yeah, so that's I've been using Fun Pitches whenever I do shorts. I have a bunch of shorts that that have one. There's other ones. I did a film called Why Live? It was a short, kind of like a spoof documentary, kind of weird. It's on my YouTube channel. It's kind of like shows like almost the end of the world using global warming and how things could end, and then it comes back and how we have to start over again, planting our own food, and you know it's kind of like that. If you see the film, it won like 4 or 5 awards, and it was done basically some green screen, and it was done with a lot of stock footage I put together. I did a typo narration, more of a less, nobody's talking. You got sound effects, you got music, and you got letters coming up describing what's going on. Yeah, short films like that I did. I did another one called It's Java Time, which have won a couple awards, one for most inventive type film. It was about people drinking coffee. It was the best experimental film it won in Queens, in Corona, Queens.
You also do some voiceover work as well?
Yeah, I did a couple of voiceover work. I did something a while back called something with the iguanas that was like almost like a Star Trek type thing. I did a character in that one, which was like the head of one of the spacecrafts. And I just did a thing from Catastrophe. I played like the old guy, the cranky old guy that's married to the wife, and the cat is the one that's crazy. Kind of like a Fritz the Cat type thing that was done in a cartoon version. They have it on Amazon. I think it's on Amazon, one of those Amazon Prime as a book. A short book, and they're doing like an audio book on it. Yeah, that was done by William Campbell, done all that, and he asked me to do one of the voices on it. So I've done that too. I did a couple of things like that. Also, I'm in a thing called The Obstacle. Another thing I partly wrote 3 years ago. I wrote, and this is a serious thing, it's kind of like a real, like, a suspense type, not gangster movie, or something kind of like The Devil's Advocate or something like that. It's based
like
on like that. Yeah, it's like it's like a mixture of Reservoir Dogs and Devil's Advocate, and William Campbell wrote half of that, and he called me up and says, I'm stuck, I can't write. So I wrote the second half of it, and that's being picked up by a Tony Welch in New York City. He was in The Irishman, and he liked it, so they are looking to try and develop that at this point. So I don't know what's going on with that. They keep calling me into. I'm busy with this my own project. I keep telling them, but I'm doing like a little sizzle reel with them. I told them, I says, I'll try and get that done, a sizzle reel. I says, but I got to do green. I have to use green. I'm the only actor because they don't have no actors yet. They're still considering certain actors. So I says, all right, I'm going to have to do it, not show my face, and do kind of like a thing, and you, again, using stock footage and green screen, and just saying be in development, and that would be the sizzle at this point. So that's another thing I'm working with at this point, too. But my main project is Left-Handed Secret Agent, which I'm trying to get done.
Now, mind you, everybody, that he's doing this while he's doing his martial arts just about how many times a week?
Well, I still work out. I go to the gym about 3-4 times a week for about 3-4 hours at a time. I don't do any martial arts there. I just do all the cardio and working out, and then I come home and I have my wooden dummy. I don't work out. When I lived in Florida, I had people to work out with. But over here, I don't have anybody to work out with, so I just, you know, go in the backyard. It's better that way. The wooden dummy, if anybody saw what that is, the Mook Jung wooden dummy, all the moves are practiced on that, and you develop power and everything, and your movements will go automatically once it's got 3 arms, got a leg part and all that, and it's, you know, got the center thing that you would hit and all that. So I work with that too. The day's kind of complete. A lot of times I like to get some rest and go away with my wife, and that's a little hard too. You know, it's a lot to cover, but if I seem to like to be alone for a while, not do anything, but that kind of like eats at me, and I still have to go back to do something to prove something. I don't know, prove to myself or whatever.
Hey, as long as it keeps you active.
Right. I guess that's another part of trying to be young and staying young is to keep the brain active. I like to read a lot, too. I pick up a book, but I like to read things about film, things about real people. I've got a lot of autobiographies and all that I like to read, too, you know, for the people and how they succeed and what they turns and trials that they went through. One of the books I was reading is about, you remember that guy from Room 222, Lloyd Haynes? Yeah, well, I'm good friends with his wife, and she came out with a book about him, and I've been reading his book. You know, it takes little times I have to go here and there. I was halfway through the book. I'm almost through all the book, but nobody realizes the things that guy went through and everything. So, you know, if you read that book, it's very inspirational with how he talked and everything, because I was a big fan of Room 222 also. And when I met her, you know, she goes, oh, well, I have a book and all. I says, oh, wow, when I see the book. And I got a copy of her book, you know. So I like to read. I like to read. I've read the whole thing of Robert Rodriguez. That's one of my favorite directors, Robert, and how he came about of his filmmaking, how he did his first film for $7,000. It's about kind of like what I want to do for my film. It's not as easy as, you know, at that time. He went down to Mexico, and there was a lot of free film and a lot of things he could do, not a lot of restrictions. The way he went about it is, you know, very original. He's a very original director, and he's like one of my idols. And that's how he does a lot of the filming and everything like that. And that's what I kind of like try and model myself from.
All right, so what can we expect from Carmine in the future?
In the future, I expect to finish this film and hopefully go on to another film. You know, it's going to, I've got, there's another thing, I think it's next month I'm supposed to go and appear in a film. I think it's a series that's on a website or something called Mafia War Chronicles. And they got me as one of the bosses going in with my whole entourage of underbosses and everything. So they sent me the script on that, so I'm studying the script, and that's scheduled to be filmed next month, and that's going to be filmed in Staten Island. That will come out, I guess, on one of their series on their, I think they have like an internet series, Mafia War Chronicles. And like I said, what I like to do is my own films, you know, my own ideas. I had an offer from another writer, you know, he just suggested he might want me to direct one of his films coming up when he finishes writing. I'm on his short list, as he put it, so we'll see on that one.
Whether he's the left-handed secret agent, which we will be keeping an eye open for, or producing, or writing, or acting, or perfecting his martial art, we will be keeping an eye open for this guy, Mr. Carmine Caradonna. Thank you so much for coming down to the Sherpa Screening Room.
And thank you, Jim, for having me on, and thank everybody out there for listening.
A very special thanks to Mr. Carmine Caradonna for coming on down to the Sherpa Screening Room. If you enjoy entertainment interviews, a while back, at the beginning of this season, we had Hollywood Week, and it was 5 days of interviews. If you haven't heard them, why not check them out on your favorite podcast app or on my website, SherpaLution.com. And don't forget, you can follow me at social media by just looking up the word SherpaLution for Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks a lot for coming down, and we'll be back with a regular episode of Too Many Podcasts next week. And I think I'll just turn it over to the right-handed voiceover guy, Mr. Bruce. Thanks a lot, guys. Viva la SherpaLution. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Too Many Podcasts. Please disperse. You can go home now. I said you can go home now. Viva la SherpaLition. Viva la SherpaLition. Yeah, I'll come back now, you hear?